hello again there, folks. I've been a little bit under the weather this last week, so I didn't get much done. I think there may be some sort of bug going around, I've heard. But today I'd like to have a chat about something that's been on my mind for a while. Maybe a bit rough around the edges because I'm still not 100%. But one of the things when I've been looking back over the last year and a half and longer as well, the current state of the West for quite a long time now. One of the things that's come into my mind again and again is this idea, like, where are the teenage rebels? Where is the youthful revolt against the machine and all of this kind of thing? Because when we look at standard cultural tropes in the West, especially in America, but it's basically all across the West now. One of the things that we take for granted is that when people are in their teens, their early 20s, they're going to be radicals. They're going to be full of energy and they're going to be rebellious and against the system, anti-authoritarian and anti-establishment and all of this kind of thing. But then when you look at the current state of affairs, just to stick with Britain for a little bit, and you see who is kind of anti-system and who is against, let's say something like the New World Order. The names that pop up are like Richard Madeley, Morrissey, Roger Daltrey. I've got a list here. Richard Ashcroft, Liam Gallagher, Eric Clapton. In Ireland, you've got Van Morrison, Right Said Fred. So what you see is like people who are, and there's others as well, but like basically it's baby boomers and Generation X are the ones who are kind of rejecting the program, if you like. In other words, they're not exactly spring chickens. Some of them are well into their 70s, but even the ones from the more Britpop scene, the Gen Xers, are heading towards 50 or already in their 50s. And yet these are the people who are kind of carrying the weight of the cultural counter-revolution in the West against this tyrannical regime. Again, not just because of what's been happening over the last year and a half, but going back still further for years. And you think to yourself, and I've certainly thought to myself, where are what are the millennials and the Zoomers doing? I mean, I remember when we were promised like 5 years ago that the Zoomers, they were calling them Generation something else. But something beginning with Z, I nearly slipped up there because this is going on YouTube. But there was all of this talk about how they were going to be these radical traditional conservatives and they were going to be really edgy and that they'd kind of, this would be the long-awaited reaction to political correctness. And I don't see any signs of that appearing whatsoever. And I think to myself, where are all of the young sort of pop bands? Where are the edgy Zoomers or millennials who are in pop bands singing rebellious songs against how shitty the status quo is and all of this kind of thing? And it doesn't exist at all. And part of it, to be fair, is just the fact that they'd never get platformed. If it'd be they'd be censored, they'd never get the contracts and all of that kind of thing. But I think like there's something larger at play, and we're going to have to sort of dig in and ask, is it the norm? Is it the norm that people in their teens and early 20s will sort of rebel against the system? Well, from our perspective today, certainly from mine, as somebody who grew up in the 90s, like that does seem, you do take it for granted, the cultural trope of the teenage rebel. This is something that we just think's normal. It's sure, she's 18 now, she's going through that phase, and all of this kind of thing. She's wearing stupid makeup and everything. She just wants to show her individuality. It's a phase that everybody goes through, but it doesn't seem to be really happening anymore. And I think we have to go back to the 1950s, because it was in the 1950s when it was said that the teenager was invented in the 1950s. Because before that, it wasn't expected that young people would have any kind of political agency or play any kind of role in sort of the cultural zeitgeist. Basically, they'd just be told what to do and what to think, and that would be that. They wouldn't answer back. And what you see in the 1950s with you see the people coming on the scene like James Dean and Marlon Brando, and it's this kind of questioning of authoritarianism. At the time, this is where you get the sort of cultural Marxist types coming in, and you have the authoritarian personality, which said that the standard American family was like implicitly fascistic, with the dad at the top acting as a sort of dictator. And so it dripped into the culture that this was something to be rebelled against. And this is when you begin to see people like James Dean, Marlon Brando, and all of this. When they were saying things like, what is it that you're angry about? And what is it that you're fighting against? And they'd say, well, what do you got? So there was just this idea that you would rebel against the norms. But it began with the family in the 50s. It began with rejecting the authority of the father. And what this created was the almost like the inception of the teenager as an identity, separate from everything else. And you can see, this is going to, in our age, and this is going to, it's become something really toxic. But you can see the seeds being planted there of turning families against each other. But it also creates a new identity, which is of the angry, rebellious teenager who rejects the system and rejects authority. And it kind of its first blooming was in the 1950s. And on the one hand, it was facilitated and expressed and cultivated in like Hollywood and in music as well, even sort of Elvis, and you can see this kind of thing. But they were still kind of innocent, but it did begin there. By the time we get into the 1960s, when we get the genuine kind of counterculture movement with the hippies, that then it becomes much more formalized, and it becomes a systemic pushback against like this all of the system itself. And this is when you really do have the cultural Marxist stuff coming in the universities, Marcuse and all of that. And so this time it's not just that the teenager is rebelling against the family structures and whatnot, but against the entire sort of system. The entire they need to be liberated from these structures. And there's a lot of kind of Marxist language that you hear getting thrown around, even if they weren't actually aware of it. But this idea, you think of the hippies and you think of Woodstock, and it's like, we need to be liberated. We need to be stardust, where we're these like blank slate individuals wandering around in the desert. And I recently did the classic movies stream with Endeavour, and we were talking about Bonnie and Clyde, which came out in 1967. And you do see that. You see that in Bonnie and Clyde. It's this rejection of authority. It's like anarchic. Screaming around in a car, like to hell with the system. We just want to be free. We just want to be liberated. You see it in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You see it most of all in Easy Rider. So it's this liberation from the system, and it's this rejection of the status quo. But the status quo would, of course, been the sort of capitalism. I think now and then, it's. There would be capitalism as an oppressive system, which is imposing itself on them as free individuals and this kind of thing. But when you, I think they pushed it a little bit too far, and it gets a little bit more dicey for them when they actually meddle in the affairs of the deep state, like with the Vietnam War protests and this kind of thing. Because this is a very important thing to mention, because it's all very well talking about the long march and through the institutions, which is what this was really, where you begin to see that kind of oppressor narrative coming in. But first of all, it's everybody, or at least these kind of white teenagers, these young baby boomers in the 60s, being oppressed by the system itself, or being oppressed by the family structure, or what's expected of them, and all of this kind of thing. And while a lot of people will go on and on about the Long March through the Institutions and cultural Marxism, what doesn't get discussed nearly enough is that the American deep state and a lot of very powerful people in America actually wanted this to happen. They facilitated it. And one of the reasons for that is that they were actually worried about a genuine old school Marxist revolution. Because at the end of the day, Wall Street bankers and people, you know, working at the Pentagon who are drawing up plans for Vietnam or all of this kind of thing, they don't want to be coming out of their office and have somebody like riddle them with bullets from some AK-47, which has just been smuggled in from Cuba and all of this kind of thing. So in a way, the kind of cultural revolution was a proxy and a safer bet, a safer cul-de-sac to send people's energies into than actually facing an outright like old school Marxist violent terrorist gang or something like that. So what happened instead was that you have this idea of the individual wanting to be liberated from the system, but then that begs a question: what is it that they are going to use to fill that void with? And what are they going to form their identity on? And what they would actually form their identity on would be eventually consumerism. And so, for the first thing, what you begin to see is that what should have been this healthy teenage sort of energy and rebellion against the system, it lasts for a little blip, but by the time you get into the 70s, you realize that people are these kind of what would become the atomized individual, but they're also not actually forming like militias. They're not actually doing any kind of revolutionary activity. What they're doing is it's a sort of fetishization of the individual, and each of those individuals is selecting and choosing from a range of products provided by the system, which then forms their identities. And so it's like this huge con trick, and the more they do that, the more they think they're expressing their individuality. In actual fact, as a matter of protest, as a matter of rebellion, but what they're actually doing is reinforcing the system. So this is kind of like how we got here, and you can see it in something of the 1970s. If you think of Network, Howard Beale's famous speech, because what he's doing, he's going on the television and he's raging against the machine. He's raging against this system that's got everybody enslaved. But what happens is that the people who own the network, they see that he, on the one hand, he comes across like a sort of unhinged lunatic, but on the other hand, the ratings are going sky high and the advertisers are very happy. The shareholders are making a killing. All of this. So on the one hand, you've got Howard Beale going on stage raging against the machine. But then behind the scenes, the machine are actually benefiting from it. And this is kind of the story of how the what would be a rebellion against the system actually ends up facilitating the system itself. But I think it's fair to say that Network is quite it's quite highbrow. It's not typical. But in the 70s in general were kind of a transition period. And there's some odd things there as well. But it's when we get into the 80s, you've got neoliberalism, you get Margaret Thatcher, you've got Ronald Reagan. And it's then that I think that you really see the synthesis coming perfectly together, where what would amount in terms of like movies and pop songs, because what you've got then is a culture industry. A huge industry as well, which you know never hurts. You can see that they formed this identity in the 50s, and then in the 1980s, it's been properly commodified as product. And instead of it being what could have happened, some revolutionary bunch of fanatics gunning down the rich or whatever like that, you know, kidnapping people and all of this crazy stuff, which did happen. That actually did happen in places like Germany. You do it. There was it wasn't perfect, but it was good enough. And by the time you get to the 1980s, you think of something like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and you think of The Lost Boys. You think of all of this. All of the culture becomes very youth orientated because they've created that identity as a separate thing, as a separate form in the 1950s and the 1960s and so on. By the time you've got teenagers of the 1980s, it's as if all of the culture and the music is directed towards them. But Almost always, an implicit part of that is the idea that they're rebelling against the system in some way. But it, like, say, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, for example, you can think of so many ideas, and this just taking it for granted that even some like crappy pop band like Bross, it was wait, who kind of had this back to the 50s look to them. Again and again and again, it was this idea that you once you were a teenager, you were going to push back against the system. You were going to speak your mind. You weren't going to be bossed around, and you were going to stick it to the man. But it was all product. It was all contained in this cul-de-sac. I think by the time, and I think in the 80s, it was at its peak. I think it was perfected. But when we get in the 90s, when Gen X really begin to come in on the scene in the 90s, which I'm more familiar with, I think something begins to set in. And this, so Generation X is this known as this kind of really cynical generation, which didn't take anything particularly seriously. And you can see it in like what was in the culture at the time, and you see bands coming in, pop bands coming in, like Nirvana, and of course, again you see like where the Nirvana would produce songs like with names like Radio Friendly Unit Shifter, and Nirvana are interesting as like one of the sort of flagship pop groups of Generation X, because normally, if you look at some of the other ones around, like Metallica, they softened over time. Nirvana actually get more extreme and more out there as you follow the albums in. And it's because they were trying to find a way to genuinely sort of be rebellious to what Howard Beale was, the Howard Beale trap, if we could call it that. Where the more you rage and rant against the system, the more the system likes what you're doing and facilitates it and gets rich off it. So you're reinforcing it. And Kurt Cobain seems to have been onto this, and it leads to an enormous amount of frustration. I mean, it's also why so many leftists, I think, like a little bit later, people like Mark Fisher end up profoundly depressed and suicidal, because there just seems to be no way out of this trap. And Smashing Pumpkins actually had a song where they said, "Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage," because your rebellion is then repackaged and goes back in, that energy goes back into the system as a commodified product, just like a Che Guevara t-shirt. This is the safe way that it's genius when you think about it. But this is where all of this Generation X cynicism comes in, I think, because there's this endless cynicism and irony. It is in a way like sort of throwing up your hands and saying, yeah, it's all just a big con trick. I can't take any of this seriously. There's no way out. And so you get this kind of South Park and all of those American animations come in, which they do, in the beginning they didn't seem to be like very political. It was more like a kind of postmodern commentary on the madness of the situation, how unreal it all was, you know. By far and away, the most requested movie that people ask me to take a look at is Fight Club, which is of course typical of the 90s. But I think it's also says a lot about that Generation X cynicism and disconnect from even being able to rebel against the system, because essentially it's Edward Norton is this like sad consumerist bogman who doesn't know he because of the fact that he's locked into this system where rebellion is kind of calculated into the life, into the daily routine, your little slice of rebellion. And he ends up like forming a split personality, which is Brad Pitt, who brings back that kind of feeling of revolution. And Brad Pitt asks, like, where is our great fight? Where is our great war? Why am I walking around with some guy's name on my underwear? Like, what is it? And eventually they do form like literally a revolutionary terrorist group, and set about blowing up the towers of the multinationals who've reduced everybody to this state of consumer. Again, where if you think the kind of the fashions that they're selling you, It does have that era, Levi's jeans and all of this. The teenage rebellion is product. It is there, and it was like that from the start. Fight Club's interesting because it's kind of taking you outside of that, and it's a Generation X attempt to solve the problem. But eventually, like when I've said many times before that after 2000. It's as if this all just seemed to disappear. It was as if the kind of postmodern cynicism of Generation X was the last gasp before the sort of counterculture, which is how this is the evolution of the counterculture, and it ended up in the 2000s when the millennials come in, kind of going where it just got absorbed completely and it became the hegemonic form. It became the system. And so this meant that the people didn't actually know what rebellion was, what you were rebelling about. This is why now you see the left, the radical left, just agree with the system on absolutely everything. And so I think what we're seeing is this grand arc drawing itself to a close. So if we think of the trope of the teenager as being oppressed by the system, or rejecting authority, whatever that happens to be. So it begins in the 50s with the patriarchy, the father figure, and the teenage. He wants to go out with his leather jacket on. He wants to have a car, and he doesn't want his parents pestering him because he's a special individual and they don't understand him. In the 60s, we get the full flowering of it, so to speak, where it becomes about this systemic problem. And then in the 70s. It becomes somewhat institutionalized and absorbed into the system. In the 80s, it becomes commercialized and perfected and just a pure cultural product, which is the dominant form. By the time we get to the 90s, there's this like the irony sets in, the awareness of the fakeness of it sets in, and people begin to question that itself. But it doesn't seem to sort of result in anything. There doesn't seem to be a way out. So again, even something like Natural Born Killers, which is this like it's a psychotic movie, but I think in many ways it sums up the Generation X of the 90s. I think and it's also a kind of grotesque parody of the earlier 60s movies of the kind of the couple in love on the road, gunning people down like Bonnie and Clyde. Except this time, the commentary is that this has been induced by the media, that it's actually a hyper reality which has been created by the media, which is now resulting in just where people think in terms of what they've seen on the television. And so you do get these kind of meta takes in the 90s, but by the time we move into the 2000s, it seems even that has reached its conclusion, and that this sort of big circle is drawing to a close, or it's going back to where it started, which is just of having a kind of hegemonic cultural form. And so from that perspective, when you look at the millennials and the Zoomers and you think, why aren't they rebelling against the system? It's as if there's nothing there. Like, what would they use? The only because like the counterculture is the dominant culture. It's all there is. It's a civilization which is just a negation of itself, like I said in the last video. And so one way out of this, which I'll maybe explore in another video, is that because I've been discussing, which is sort of from the left, really. This whole thing was the way to control the left and sort of send it into that cul-de-sac. But what about the right then? What about the far right? What about kind of traditional Christianity or nationalism and these kinds of things? I mean, as we know, the system is much more blunt and sort of effective at bludgeoning that and keeping that out for different reasons, but that would be a different video. So what they have now on offer is to agree with the system, which you can't rebel against it unless you go like to the far right. But that's got like this massive moral stigma attached to it. And so what you have in the end, to get back to the original point, is a youth which is not rebellious, and it doesn't know how to rebel against the system. It's as if we've entered a mode where we were before the James Dean kind of thing of the 50s. Because if you go back before the 50s for the rest of history, it isn't a thing. It doesn't. The whole thing with the teenage rebel, the anti-establishment youth. Oh, well, I'm going to kick back. I'm going to stick it to the man. That never existed before the 1950s, and it's starting to look like now that that circle is coming to a close, that it's not going to exist after that either, and that rather than expecting that this is like some eternal form is the rebellious youngster, the rebellious youth, that it's could very well be, and I think it is, that it's more that the baby boomers and Generation X were part of a were the blip. They were the outlier, and conformity in young people is the historic norm. But from our perspective today, that seems kind of weird, or it seems less and less weird. But if you were to, if you were to say this to somebody in the 1990s or the early 2000s, that in actual fact, the norm of society is that young people just shut their mouths and do as they're told, and they just like absorb the messaging of the system like sponges. That would have seemed crazy because the counterculture was like the thing. It was all you saw was this idea of teenage rebellion all over the place. And of course, it isn't the case anymore. It's gone. And so rather than it being that, oh, well, the teenagers are rebellious, I think that's just not the case. The historic norm is that they conform and they do what they're told, and that you have Generation X and the baby boomers as these outliers, and that's what we see today. We see the most like outrageous authoritarian measures. We see the most outrageous political correctness doctrines, and yet the youth just seem by and large to go along happily with it. Whereas it's the older people, it's people even into their 70s who seem to be the most outspoken about it. But this is probably a return to a norm, rather than and having Gen X and the boomers being the outliers. So don't put your hope in any kind of youthful rebellion, I think I'm saying. So anyway, thanks for listening, folks. Absolutely.